It's Wednesday, day four of our fall pledge drive. We're asking you to call in and keep community radio alive, keep local and regional reporting here at KVNF and across the Western Slope alive by calling 527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF now. We've got a challenge on the table. You can double your investment in community radio this morning. If you've been waiting, thinking about doing it, don't wait any longer. 527-4868. This is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick, and the Denver Post reports wind power generation in Colorado is set to grow by 26% or 6,000 megawatts, adding to the 2,300 megawatts of wind energy already produced in the state. A number of wind companies, including Xcel Energy, Black Hell Energy, and the Tri-State Generation and Transmission Association, already have plans to grow their energy output. According to the Post, one Winergy trade group expects Colorado will soon be one of the top five states for wind industry growth in the nation. Part of that growth comes from a federal production tax credit that was restored for another year. That credit initially expired at the end of 2012, but was renewed by Congress in January. The tax credit requires wind companies to begin projects before the end of this year, but as the Post explains, most of the actual production will take place next year. The Post also reports Colorado is again making history in the wake of Amendment 64, the measure that legalized recreational marijuana for adults, but also initiated hemp growing regulations for the state. One Colorado farmer in Baca County last week harvested the first commercial hemp crop grown in the U.S. in 56 years. The Hemp Industries Association says hemp product sales in the U.S. Brought in about $500 million last year, but all of that hemp was imported since the crop is banned under federal law. According to the Post, the last known commercial hemp crop was harvested in Wisconsin in 1957. Colorado's hemp growing regulations take effect next year, but the one Baca County farmer planted his crop this past April. Area mining officials say the federal government shutdown isn't having significant impacts on day-to-day operations, but as the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports, project approval delays could potentially affect longer-term mining plans. An Art Cole spokesman told the Sentinel that it was, quote, business as usual at the West Elk Mine near Somerset, while a former general manager at Bowie No. 2 said the shutdown isn't impacting business there. According to the Sentinel, the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration has a plan in place to keep up inspections and investigations to prevent safety risks. One public meeting to discuss the expansion of the Kaloyo coal mine between Craig and Meeker was canceled this week because of the government shutdown. It's expansions like that one and new mining permits that could be held up by the shutdown. Though Oxbow Mine in Somerset recently shut down and laid off around 150 workers due to safety concerns, Executive Vice President Mike Ludlow said the government shutdown could delay the mine's plans being approved by the Mine Safety and Health Administration going forward. Talks in the dispute over gas drilling in the Thompson Divide suggest that energy companies there might be willing to accept a payout in return for not drilling in the area. According to the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, the negotiating parties on both sides of the debate aren't saying much, but a spokesman for the Ursa Resources Energy Company said his company is ready to make a deal that works for both sides. Don Simpson of Ursa told the Post-Independent the company has, quote, tossed around different dollar amounts, and that they're ready to come up with a deal that benefits the company and those opposed to drilling. Simpson wouldn't give specifics on what those dollar amounts were, but called the company's offers in the talks, quote, a bargain. As the Post-Independent reports, officials with the Thompson Divide Coalition were more tight-lipped about the talks. The TDC has been fighting for 3 years to keep drilling out of nearly 200,000 acres of public lands south and west of Carbondale in Glenwood Springs. That region covers land in Pitkin, Gunnison, Garfield, Mesa, and Delta counties. Colorado U.S. Senator Michael Bennett has supported the group's efforts. Bennett introduced a bill last March that would remove most of the region from future oil and gas leasing proposals. And finally today for our IC Change report, Dallas and June Harding are regulars on the almanac.org, but most of their daily weather observations you'll see there date back to the late 80s. That's because those entries were transcribed from the journals June started keeping in 1985 when she and Dallas moved to their current home at the Harding Ranch near the base of Coal Mountain. I recently paid the Hardings a visit to talk about how they got involved with the IC Change project and how journaling has played a role in their lives and the lives of previous generations. Dogs and cats greet me as I get to the door of the Hardings' house. situated on a serene, calming piece of property with stunning close-up views of the nearby mountains.
You tell him the mountains, honey. You know them better than I do.
Well, that's Mount Gunnison off here with your left. You should talk of it. And then it comes around to Hoodoo Gap.
Dallas's family homesteaded this ranch in 1904, and the land's been in the family ever since. The Hardings have a long history here, with rich ties to the community. But June still insists she's not what you'd call an old-timer.
I've only been here 61 years since we were married. And so I'm really a newcomer. I don't know all this old-timey stuff.
The Hardings' journal observations of the weather, most of them written by June, are a key part of what the almanac's all about. Sharing and comparing observations on how wildly different and similar the environment can be from year to year. One recent example, the week Cedar Keshet posted pictures of the season's first snow on Coal Mountain, June's journal from 1989 says it was still 88 degrees out that year.
And then over here on the left, we have some of your posts from 1989.
Well,
in 1989, on this day, terrible storm in the night where lightning struck your telephone pole.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look back to her entries from just a week before that in 1989, it was 30 degrees outside their home and snow was on Gunnison. Looking back at June's journals can tell us a lot about the history of this country. It's easy to say this year's been a wild weather year in Colorado. Historic rains in the middle of a historic drought alone will tell you that. But without those firsthand accounts from decades past, it's hard to tell just how wild it was, or whether these extremes were just par the course for the West. Or at least, the journals are more fun than graphs. June calls the journals just the facts, but they aren't just for scientists or weather geeks. And in fact, the Hardings didn't start writing them just to keep track of the rain.
Really, the reason we got started writing them, there were some guys doing some poaching up here. So the game warden came up to, he got a report that there was some poaching going on. So he came up and...
Because he wanted facts in order to nail these guys who were up here killing everything they could find.
So like some sort of frontier-style legal defense, the Hardings journals were their way of showing the game warden they weren't poachers. They were too busy making applesauce. But June soon got hooked on journaling, and now says she's glad she did.
And oh, they have been so valuable. We've looked back in those journals many, many times to help us remember something. But it's kind of nice to look back and see what was it like 2 years ago. It's really been invaluable. Tell him what is this?
This is my mother's diary. And she kept a diary all the time.
Journaling in the Harding family goes back farther than June and Dallas, though. Dallas shows me one of his mother's diaries from 1938 to 1942. It comes from a time when the written word was perhaps more important to daily life than it is today, when jotting down a day's work was just as common as checking your email. June says when she reads through those diaries, she's impressed with just how hard times really were.
They talk about picking peas, and they picked peas and picked peas. And then sometimes that's all they had to eat.
Weather was a big part of the elder Miss Harding's journals as well. Dallas reads an end-of-the-year entry from 1940.
Ups and downs, the worst flood we ever had. More and more damage from erosion. Sheep again here this year.
Bits of wisdom are scattered throughout the diary.
A little note she put on the side of it in the back. Says, remember to put down the weather for the first 12 days of New Year. Mr. Rober says a good guide for weather of each month in turn.
I finally asked June what her reaction was when KVNF approached her about putting all these old journals online.
What? I mean, they're only just information, you know, for us. And I guess, yeah, it was a surprise. But, you know, we really do want to leave the heritage of our country here. Because you young people are moving in, and it's really flattering to us that you care enough about our area, that you want to know about it. That's what I find really awesome, more so than the journals.
I asked June before I left what it's like seeing those journals on the internet, cemented in history, used as a reference for people across the region as they're watching the seasons change.
I think it's wonderful that you young folks are so interested, and I'm fine with letting the world know what it was like.
And when she says what it was like, she's not just talking about the weather. According to June, if you read back through her journals, or Dallas's mother's, or any of the older generations, you'll find a theme.
Life was hard. It's getting easier all the time. But life has been really hard up here.
For IC Change and the Almanac.org, I'm Travis Bubinick.